Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. Jeff, how are we doing this week?
Doing just fine, and kind of nice to have that second bye week of the season. I'm not going to lie. We got a lot of things we're doing as a family, so we'll take advantage of that time.
That's right. We need the bye week more than the team does, right?
You are not kidding about that.
You know what? That's part of having a young son, though, Jeff. Their schedule is probably busier than your schedule, busier than the team's schedule.
That is a fact. Yep, he keeps us on our toes, which is a good thing.
Most of the time, it's a good thing. All right, let's get moving here. You know, Jeff, with the bye week, it's also an opportune time. We're six games into the season. We're halfway through. It's a good time to pause, take a look at where the team sits, especially after what we thought before the season started, what we thought were the issues. Before we get there, though, I want to give you the final opportunity for some thoughts on last week's game against USC. Overtime, 33-30. Big game. My question to you is, just how big was it? How big was this win for the Nittany Lions?
To be honest, I don't think we're really going to have the complete answer to that. I know what I think, but I keep thinking things that end up not being right this college football season. But I think it's going to turn out to be really, really huge. Now, the reason I'm kind of hedging my bet there is if Penn State turns around and, let's say, loses in Madison next week, well, then how significant was that win over USC? We could still debate. It's still a big win, still important, but not in order for it to have the significance that I think it has and should have. Penn State needs to get to 11-1 at the very least in the regular season, and I think Penn State will do that. I just think it was one of those games where they made the plays consistently when they needed to, whether it was Jalen Reed with the interception, Ryan Barker with the field goal, the two clutch fourth down receptions where Aller delivers the ball and Fleming catches the ball. And that second one in particular, to me, Jim, is if I'm looking at a play that kind of defines why I think that game is so huge, it was Aller eluding the rush that was really strong. I mean, USC, I think, did everything it could to prevent that opportunity even from occurring for Penn State to get the ball downfield. Aller does a great job of not only avoiding the rush, but keeping his eyes downfield, not trying to run for it. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he could have made it. I think that's doubtful. But makes the throw, an accurate throw, coming back across his body to a receiver, Julian Fleming, who has not made a lot of big catches at Penn State or throughout his college career. And in good coverage, he makes the reception. That, to me, I don't think at least in the analysis I've seen, I don't think enough credit has been given there for that particular play with what Drew Aller did and the maturity with which he, the maturity and the skill level that he displayed on that particular play. So, yeah, I think it was a huge win in every way imaginable, but you need to make it stand up as a big win, I guess is my point with what you do the rest of the season.
I'm really glad you brought up that play and Drew Aller's part in it, and I want to get to that more. But going back to this, how big is this win? I get it. You know, if they lay an egg against Wisconsin, it could be all for naught. But I think going into the season, most prognosticators were saying, well, 10-2 again. And that first loss, everyone said, will be Ohio State. And until they beat Ohio State, everyone, that's fair game to call it that way. But they always looked at USC on the road as this second loss. So your point is really valid. I guess my question is 11-1, and let's assume the losses to Ohio State, that, Jeff, conceivably can get you into the Big Ten Conference Championship game. More than likely, though, it would still be Oregon and Ohio State. But at 11-1, at the very least, you're playing a home playoff game. A second loss, you're at the mercy of the playoff committee, right?
Correct. And it's interesting the way, again, as this season has evolved, some things are playing out. And, you know, I think I've said repeatedly, Jim, that this season to me, the way everything has laid out, it just feels like Penn State is catching a lot of breaks. You know, I mentioned that, like, the West Virginia game not being a night game. Small thing, but that's an advantage for Penn State. Penn State not having to play Michigan or Oregon this year. Seemingly, in years past, Penn State just always seemed to get the bad breaks, or at least I think Penn State fans perceived it that way. Well, now you only have the Ohio State of the two teams that traditionally have given Penn State problems in recent years. I thought before the season, 10-2 definitively got Penn State in the playoffs. As the season has played out, all of those advantages that are laying Penn State's way are only advantages, again, if you take care of business, because now that lack of another marquee team, and we'll see how the season plays out. Could Illinois still end up being a marquee team? Yeah, could happen. Possibility that depending on how things play out, a couple of other teams could get in the mix there. But it doesn't look the way I'm expecting things to play out. Like there's another game there, even against another top 20 team in terms of the final rankings. And to me, that means you would have a loss to a non-top 20 team along with the loss to Ohio State, if we're presuming that. And then I think because of the lack of a marquee victory there, I think it's a very real debate as to whether Penn State deserves or would get into the playoffs. And worst case scenario, and I think because of the win over USC, Penn State's going to avoid it. But worst case scenario, Jim, can you imagine the angst in Nittany Nation if Penn State sits there as, well, yep, they're the first team out. They're like 13th, however you want to look at 13th. But, I mean, the 12 teams in, and then, man, if we had a 14-team playoff, Penn State definitively would have been in there. And I think that is a possible scenario. I mean, I really do, if Penn State finished at 10-2. The good news is I really don't think Penn State is going to do that. I think the Nittany Lions will take care of business and go at least 11-1 now in the regular season.
It's funny. All of us who call Penn State USC the most important game will bring that out again when they play Wisconsin. This is the most important game. Now, just one more thought, going back to your analysis of that fourth down play, the second one. And Jeff, I thought you brought up a great point, because I think it's something that's been in people analyzing this team have missed. Drew Aller has demonstrated that mobility and decision making much more this season. I think of that as the true difference. And the focus has been fourth down, complete the pass. And what's being missed is the play that he made in avoiding the rusher. But I also think that this game, it's probably the coming out party for Drew Aller, Tyler Warren, and Andy Kotelnicki. All three of them, I think, are now being appreciated nationally, where maybe Penn State fans were already convinced. Now I think the three of them convinced the nation.
I think that's true. I think the other thing that is just, and I think it's right that that was kind of a coming out party on the national stage for Drew Aller. What I think is just kind of bemusing about that is it was his worst game in terms of interceptions. Now, the one to me is completely meaningless with the Hail Mary, but the other two, somewhat impactful in the moment. But I think it's and again, I agree. It was his best overall game to me as a Penn State quarterback. But we talk all the time about the emphasis on, you know, you just need to not turn the ball over and Penn State is going to be all right. Well, turn the ball over. And yet we all agree that that is, or at least most of us agree that that was his best game, or certainly one of his best as a Nittany Lion. And to me, the takeaway from that, and it's much like defenses that maybe give up some plays here or there, but then make the big play when they need to. And that, to me, it's one thing if you are making mistakes that cost your team the game. You're going to make mistakes over the course of the game to whatever degree those mistakes hurt you. It is much more to me about what you do when your team needs it and when the pressure is on at its greatest. And I thought Drew Aller and really the entire team showed up biggest in those moments. And to the other side, you know, I've had a couple people point out, and rightly so, hey, if USC just makes the play there, I mean, Jalen Reed was the beneficiary of an overthrown ball. If that ball is delivered accurately, USC gets the first down, and we're not even talking about this. And you're right, and that to me is the point. USC had a chance to win the game and couldn't convert, just didn't make the play. Penn State, when it had a chance to close out the game, did what it needed to do. Well, that's the difference right now between the two programs, or at least the two teams this particular season, is USC hasn't been able to figure out how to get over the hump. They've been very competitive. I think it is a very good team, very talented team. But Penn State, you know, if you want to attribute it partly to the lessons learned over the last couple of seasons, I can buy into that. But they are finding ways to win these games and to overcome mistakes made throughout the course of the contest.
I'm very much in agreement with you on that. And the whole interception narrative, and I've seen some of those. Yeah, well, but he had three interceptions. Obviously, the Hail Mary, just take that off the board, okay? There weren't three interceptions. There were two, as far as I'm concerned. And I may be the lone person who feels this way, and maybe I'm making excuses for Drew Aller, but the interception on the pass to Khalil Dinkins, he didn't come back to the ball. And it was also tipped, you know, so it was USC, very fortunate that the tip went to them. So I'm also, you know, I'll call it 1.5 interceptions, Jeff. We are out of time for quarter number one. A lot more to go. Stay with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. And you know what, Jeff? Being the host of the show, what's really great about it is I can watch the clock, see when we're up against it, and I can figure out how I get the final word on something, okay? So nice. When we were talking, yeah, isn't that great? You're a host a lot of times, so you know how that works. Isn't that the best? However, that's not the kind of guy I am, okay? I'm not the kind of guy who's going to say, I'll get the last word, and that's it, end of discussion. I gave the last word on that interception, the one to Khalil Dinkins. I'm going to give you the opportunity to respond to my theory and what I think about the interception.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, over the course of a game, career, season, whatever with quarterbacks, you're going to be able to go back and find plays where, yeah, they get picked off and you're like, yeah, it really wasn't the quarterback's fault. you're also going to be able to go back and, man, that should have been an interception. The guy dropped it, or a great play by the receiver to knock the ball away, and those sort of things. So that stuff all evens out, regardless of how you assess it. Again, bottom line is, in the stat sheet, he has his worst game when it comes to interceptions, turnovers, as a Penn Stater. And yet we all agree it was, overwhelming majority of people agree it was his best game and best performance. And I guess part of the takeaway for me there is, yes, you want to be careful with the football. You don't want to make mistakes, but that is not the end all be all. It is okay if occasionally the other team makes a play and you turn the ball over, so long as you keep your team in it. And you keep your head up. And to me, it was as much about the mentality that Penn State had and that Drew Aller had as it was, the actual executing of the plays and everything else. It was just a mentality that, hey, we're going to go out and somehow, some way, we're going to find a way to win the game. And I think I even talked about that last week, Jim. It's like it doesn't matter to me style points. This particular game with USC isn't about anything other than finding a way to get the W, and Penn State found a way to get the W. Mission accomplished, and now you move on. And the one thing now is you want to make that moment stand up. Like that 94 comeback against Illinois, it's great because that team went on to close things out the way you wanted it to. Moments like that stand out if the rest of the season plays out as something special. It can be quickly forgotten if you take your eye off the ball and, stumble somewhere else along the way here.
My God, are you old, Jeff? You have to go back 30 years to find an example.
You are not kidding. I am reminded daily as I look in that doggone mirror. Darn your mirror.
Well, getting back to Drew Aller and the interceptions, just real quick, my point is that I've read some narratives of, oh, he got sloppy with the ball, three interceptions. That's the furthest thing from the case, is my feeling in this game. Now, what I wanted to do, Jeff, and I mentioned it at the start of our show, is I want to go, this is a great opportunity as we're halfway through the season, got a bye going on, to take a look at the first half of the season. I want to do it from this perspective. I want to go way back, Jeff, to 2 months ago, before the season started, and what our issues were and what our questions were about this team going into the season. And I think Drew Aller is a great place to start, great way to segue from our conversation in this from this specific game to an overall discussion about Drew Aller. My take on him this season is this is just a different guy, just playing with so much more confidence. But we hadn't seen a game where the team was dependent on him. But I felt confident that they could, if they needed to, ride his arm. Well, guess what? 40-some passes later in this USC game, he passed the test, Jeff.
He did. And I think it's interesting, Jim, and I'm not trying to jump the gun here on other topics, but the other part of that equation, right, is the receiving core. And what I think is a little ironic here is I think there were more drops in that game on Saturday than they've had all season long. But I think I have more confidence now in that receiving core as a whole than I did going into the game. So, if before the game you had said, man, this receiving core is going to have more drops than it has to this point in the season, and Drew Aller is going to throw three interceptions, and you're going to feel better about both of those elements of the passing game, I'm pretty sure I would have questioned your judgment, but that's where we're at. And I really do. I think, again, it is so much about what you do in the clutch. And Drew Aller and the receiving core and this team produced in the clutch when it needed to. And I think that for me is the biggest takeaway moving into the rest of the season.
And Jeff, you just can't help yourself, can you? You've got to jump ahead on my agenda. You just can't help yourself.
I know.
That's all right. That's all right. What's interesting, I'm glad you did bring up the drops, because I've looked at in prior games when we talked about drops, it always seemed to happen when there was pressure on third down. The catch, if they didn't drop it, it's a first down. Instead, it's fourth down, got a punt. It's like a turnover. And I'm thinking of the most blatant drop by Julian Fleming. I think it was on first down. Second down completion, first down. It all of a sudden rendered that totally irrelevant. Didn't matter anymore. And I'm not saying that Julian Fleming said, oh, it's first down, so it's okay if I drop the ball. But it did seem like there's a certain focus we saw later on in the game when it was fourth down, when it was do or die. And here was Julian Fleming, who really just had a handful of receptions all season, Jeff. And he comes up with two, not one, but two do or die catches. Now, you highlighted the second play and Drew Aller. I highlight the first of the two fourth down plays. Julian Fleming really had to fight for that ball from the defender. He was well covered, and he still made the catch. That's as clutch as it can be.
And part of that, Jim, was recognizing the situation. And I'm going back to Aller now on this part, because if he makes that throw on one of those first and tens in the second quarter, to me, okay, that's not great judgment, Drew. Like, you got to understand, even if it's completed, it's like, okay, you got away with it. But, man, well, fourth down, you got to trust that your guy can go make a play. You got to make something happen here, and you've got to get rid of the football and all of that. So, and Fleming, as you said, went out and, I mean, fought for that ball, got it, and secured the first down and ultimately allowed Penn State to go on to the victory. So, this is so much to me. Even the defense, I mean, I have people, well, you can't say they're an elite defense. They gave up 30 points to USC. I think I can. I know I can still say it, because I will say it. I still think this is at least a very good defense. I think USC has an elite quarterback. I think they have elite receivers, and I think that is a really good football team. People have pointed out, I mean, they are literally three plays away from being undefeated on the season and right there in the conversation with Texas and Oregon right now. So, but again, they didn't make the plays when they needed to, and to Penn State's credit, it has. So what you do in the clutch matters, and with the way the game is skewed, to me, Jim, these days, a good offense is going to consistently beat a good defense. The rules are set up that way. A quarterback who is in sync with his receivers, again, you can be in great position, but if he makes the perfect throw and the receiver has good hands, that's going to win more often than not. But can you come up with some clutch plays? And if you start looking around college football, Jim, I mean, a lot of these teams that I think are considered to have good defenses, yeah, you're going to have a game or two throughout the course of the season where you're giving up in the high 20s or early 30s against a high-powered offensive opponent, because, again, that's the way the game's played. But can you come up with an interception or a tackle for a loss when the game is on the line? The answer for Penn State on Saturday was, you betcha. And that, to me, is that's what you're looking for. Right? Can your quarterback shake off a couple of picks and deliver the ball in the clutch? Can a receiver who had a drop earlier in the game hang on to it when it matters most? Those are the things that are critical. Yes, you want to make every play. You want to capitalize on every opportunity. It's just not realistic. And I think when you see this team consistently coming through when it mattered most, whether it's Jalen Reed's interception, deny Dennis Sutton making the tackle for a loss, that, to me, if you asked me to circle the one play in the game that ended up being the difference maker, that actually is the play. Oh, Iron had two fourth downs. I'm telling you, It got USC off of schedule on that and made them kick the longer field goal that they ended up missing and all of that. I think if they get what they had been getting, which was big positive chunks of yardage on that run play, who knows how the game ends up. But anyways, that you're getting defensive stops when you needed it. You're getting a place kicker making the field goals when you need it. You're getting a quarterback delivering the ball to the receiver making the catches. All of that stuff, when you needed it, Penn State got it across the board on Saturday.
Oh, Ironhead, I don't understand where you're coming from. Without those two fourth down plays, we never even have that opportunity for deny Dennis Sutton to make the play in overtime.
That is a fact.
It is. Now, I'm glad you brought up this from the USC perspective also, because it's works well for Penn State to say USC is a good team. But I was really impressed with them also. I question how USC will perform the rest of the season. Will they look at it and say, you know what, this is their third disheartening loss, so do they kind of pack it in? Or do they say, you know what, we still have an opportunity at a 9-3 season. We can go through the rest of our games. We can finish up with Notre Dame with that last game. Once more, Jeff, I'm watching the clock. I get the last word. We got lots more to go right after this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante, your host, who dominates the clock. He's Jeff Byers. Jeff, when we wrapped it up, quarter number two, I was very, very, very impressed with that USC team. I was mentioning to you during the break, I don't know how they're going to respond to this third loss. Will they pack it in? You know, the opportunity for the playoffs is totally off the table for them. Yeah. Will they get their act together? I know Lincoln Riley's under a lot of pressure there. I think there are a lot of fans already calling for him to be replaced, but If I were in charge at USC, I'm not making the change because I see signs from this team. And I hope USC, not just for Penn State's sake, but for their sake, that's a good team. I hope they recover the rest of the way.
Yeah, and it is going to be interesting to see how they respond because, you know, they have the long trip, albeit against a Maryland team that's struggling, but they're still coming back across the other side. I mean, I think they'll be okay there. The one that is going to be really interesting to me, because I really thought Rutgers until this past Saturday was a team that I was very impressed with what they were doing. And the fact that they gave up 42 points, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what happened there with that Rutgers-Wisconsin game, because the one thing I did not think could happen there was Wisconsin blowing Rutgers out. And of course that's what did happen. So I thought that was going to be a really troublesome game for USC, even though Rutgers has to go across the country for that one. But I mean, there's a path there for USC to win out for sure. And I also think it's within the realm of possibility that, yeah, it just collapses and they lose another three or even four games here that the rest of the season. I agree. I think they're worth the watch, because if that team does hang together and decides it wants to play hard and get over the hump here for Lincoln Riley, I really do think this is a team that could end up going 9-3. But it is much more about mindset and mentality right now in that locker room. And obviously impossible for me to assess that to any reasonable degree. But I'm very curious to see how that team closes out the second half of the season.
I am too. And I know we're going a little off tangent, but it is fascinating. I'm with you. I thought Rutgers would be with USC would be a very competitive game. And now I'm not sure, especially because it's out at USC. But there's a couple interesting games. Other than Rutgers, USC still has Washington on the schedule at Washington. They're home and with Nebraska. And of course, they have Notre Dame also on the schedule. Going to be a lot of interesting games for them. All right, getting back on topic, Jeff, when we started with talking about Drew Aller, you know, the questions before the season, you previewed talking about the wide receivers. That may have been the biggest question mark going into the year. And I think Tyler Warren is such a huge part of the passing game. It's almost like you have to count him in as in part of this discussion. But evaluate the receivers for me. And I just want to point out, Tyler Warren with his 40 receptions leads the team. He has more receptions with 40 than the top three wide receivers combined who have 39.
Yeah, and so like that is to me slightly concerning. And I do think it's I know we're halfway through the season, and so an incomplete grade doesn't feel like it's it should be right. I still listen, I have more confidence in the group of receivers now than I did at the start of the season. I certainly would not rank this as one of the top receiving corps in all of the country right now, or even all of the Big Ten. But can they continue to make plays when they need to? To this point, that they have. Again, those two catches by Fleming, as big of catches as Penn State has had all season. And, you know, part of it is, why would you not keep going to Ty Warren if it's working? I like that. That doesn't make sense. Well, we just want to get receivers more involved. Well, if you have a mismatch, and Tyler Warren has proven to be a mismatch across the board right now, again, take advantage of that and buy into it. So the receivers have not made as many big plays as I would have thought or would have hoped, maybe would be a better way to put that, to this point in the season. But Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming have made more big plays in the last 3 weeks than I would have thought they would, given what we saw through the first 3 weeks. So I guess my confidence level is good, but not great in this receiving core. But I think, again, I feel better about it right now than I did going into the USC game. And I feel better about it certainly at the midway point of the season than I did at the start of the season, which is not to say that, again, I think that, okay, they've arrived and we don't have anything to worry about there. That's not the case for me with this receiving core. But I think it's done well to this point, and I think certainly for Penn State to get to where it wants to get to, and I think that's interesting too. Maybe we'll talk about that at some point, Jim, as to what cashing in. I used that term on our Goon and Ironhead show earlier this week. What does it mean now for Penn State to cash in on this year's team? Meaning, what is going to be deemed as, man, you really took advantage of having Tyler Warren and Drew Aller and Nicholas Singleton and Abdul Carter. For me, at the start of the year, it was, yeah, you need to get to the playoffs and maybe win a game. Right now, to me, it feels like if they're not one of the final four standing, it's going to feel like, yeah, it didn't quite capitalize on the opportunity that was there. That's where I'm at with this team.
I'm just to sidetrack a bit onto that question, and because I need to put in my two cents, I really feel now like 11-1, I think home playoff game, winning that home playoff game, which gets you to the final eight.
Yeah,
I want to see them get at least that far. And candidly, Jeff, if that means being that first home team, which is number five. You then play the number four seed, which, by the way, is not necessarily the fourth best team in the country.
Right.
It's the fourth best conference winner, which means you're playing either the ACC or the Big 12 conference winner. I think there's a good chance Penn State would be a favorite in that game. And if that scenario comes up, you win that game and you're in the Final Four, which was my roundabout way of saying, yeah, I agree with you. Here's the other thing in talking about the wide receivers, and this is partially the eye test, but also in looking at the numbers, separating Tyler Warren, there are four other receivers, and I'm including Nick Singleton in this, with double-digit receptions, and Julian Fleming with nine. So it's Trey Wallace, 17, Omari Evans, 11, Liam Clifford, 11, Nick Singleton, 10, and Julian Fleming with nine. What I feel a bit better about, Jeff, is it feels like each one of those guys have had moments where they were big plays that were made. As you mentioned, Liam Clifford did it, you know, a couple weeks ago. Julian Fleming obviously did it in this game. Trey Wallace a couple times, specifically in West Virginia. Omari Evans, I mean, his average catch is over 20 yards, excuse me. So we were concerned, you know, would there be two guys separating themselves and being really good? Well, maybe we haven't seen that, but we've got at least, like, I think four guys who are pretty good. And I kind of like having that ability.
Yeah, and again, let's see how the rest of the season plays out, because there's going to be more opportunities for those guys to make plays that are going to be difference makers in particular games or for the season as a whole. And again, I certainly like what the offense has presented to this point as a whole. And I think we knew going in, the strengths were more with the running game, more with the offensive line. And, you know, Drew Aller certainly is an important component here to giving those receivers, along with the offensive line, the opportunity to be successful. And again, when they've been called upon, by and large, it has been a group that has made more plays than it's, you know, missed opportunities with.
We're going to jump on the defensive side next quarter, but let's wrap up on the offensive side with new offensive coordinator. I think a lot of us felt pretty good about Andy Kotelnicki coming in, but we felt the same way about Mike Yurcich also and Kirk Ciarrocca. Halfway through the season, your thoughts on Andy Kotelnicki?
Yeah, I think the bye week is the perfect time here, Jim, to get rid of him and make the move. They've got to get an offensive coordinator. No, I'm just throwing around. Listen, you know, we heard he was a mad scientist. That play with Tyler Warren snapping the ball and catching it, that is about as creative a play as you're going to see anywhere, anytime in college football. So, you know, to me, he has lived up to the billing. The one thing, and I talked about this again earlier this week on the Goon and Ironhead show up here, is I hope people are giving enough credit to Kotelnicki and to the offensive players. When you have three different quarterbacks, three different guys that are taking snaps, you have a couple of different guys that are snapping the ball, you have different personnel groupings in and out, to not have the false start penalties, to not have the fumbled snaps, to execute that play with Warren where Prabula gets the ball to Aller accurately. And by the way, USC, on top of that play, it wasn't like Penn State fooled them. All credit to Dan Tomlin and that USC defense. They were ready for it. How you're ready for that, I have no idea. But they were. That Warren is covered. I mean, he's draped. But Aller delivers the ball perfectly. Warren makes a sensational catch, and it doesn't matter. But the lack of penalties, and again, we talked earlier in the season about some of the pre-snap penalties, and it was more on the defensive side. But that is not an easy thing. And believe me, if there were those penalties in that game, we would be hearing about it, and it would be a criticism of Andy Kotelnicki.
Jeff, you started watching the clock, my friend. You got the final word in Q3. Stick around. We got more to go in Q4.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. It's Q4 of our show. And Jeff, you thought you snuck in the final word there in the last segment. I'm sorry, my friend. I still have the controls here. I want to make one last comment about that play, the double pass. And you mentioned how USC's defense wasn't fooled, that they still had coverage on Tyler Warren. They did ultimately. But if you watch the view that isolates on Tyler Warren, initially he did get lost. That defender, I think, made a heck of a play coming over, realizing that Tyler Warren was there. The other little aspect of that play, and I'll give credit over to our friends at For the Bloggy who reviewed that play, and I sort of noticed this when they showed the replay on TV, is watching Tyler Warren, when they do the shifting, he kind of bends over and hides behind the offensive lineman, and has bent over where it makes it difficult to see his number. So when he's over there snapping the ball, it's very easy for the defense to lose him. Again, just a fun play and makes this Penn State team more fun to watch, Jeff.
Yeah, and there was a lot to it because Prabula has to actually be to his left on that play for it to be a legal play as well, which makes that snap. And again, obviously, it's something they worked on and all of that, but that's not the easiest thing in the world to do, especially if that's not a role that you are normally playing. And again, to me, Penn State just deserves a lot of credit, coaches and players alike, for doing all of the different things they did. Even the Aller, that whole, hey, I can't hear anything. Yes. in my helmet, and boom, this ball snapped. Like, that's brilliant stuff, but it's brilliant if it's executed right. And it's easy to have, again, somebody make a twitch, have the ball not be handled properly. Like, when all of that works, yeah, that stuff looks brilliant. It is not easy to make all of that stuff work. And when you had as many different, little gadget plays like that and little things that Penn State threw in as wrinkles, and to go through all of that without the pre-snap penalties or any confusion within the offense, that is a big deal. And that, again, to me, Andy Kotelnicki and those players deserve a ton of credit, because I guarantee you, if you get penalties there, right, the fans come out of the woodwork, oh, why can't you just play football? You don't have to win with all of these gimmicks and all of that. And it's so easy to criticize that stuff when you make the mistakes. The fact that Penn State did not make any of those mistakes in the game against USC with any of those plays is, to me, very remarkable.
It's funny. I had almost forgotten about the play with Drew Aller pretending he couldn't hear the call coming in. That was exceptional. And just one more note on that, the play and the legality of it with the double pass going to Tyler Warren after he snapped the ball. If you look, the five offensive linemen are there like they normally would be. And Tyler Warren is lined up like a tight end right. Yep. Next to the offensive line. The only difference was he snapped the ball instead of the guy who you know, we traditionally call the center. And if you also notice the receivers on that side of the line where Tyler Warren was, the two guys in front of Drew Aller were also off the line of scrimmage, okay? So Tyler Warren was the last guy on the line. So that's all part of making sure everything was legal. And I didn't know this. I never gave it any thought, but it really doesn't matter which guy snaps the ball.
Right, but you need to have four players to the other side of Warren for that to be a legal snap. And that's why Prabula, if you look at it, he can't be directly behind him or that play is not legal. And obviously Penn State had to give the heads up to the officials, hey, this is what we're doing, and they're looking for it to make sure that Penn State is lined up the way they need to be for that. It was a brilliant play. I mean, it really was.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that explanation. It was probably a 20-minute conversation to explain to the officials what they're doing and why it was legal, Jeff.
Yep.
But yep. I think that kind of thing gives Andy Kotelnicki an A for the first half of the season. All right, I promised we'd talk defense. Let's go to that side of the ball. First up, I think the biggest issue going into the season, or the biggest talking point, was Abdul Carter making the move to defensive end, Jeff. Your take on his play so far in the first half of the season?
I think it continues to get better, and I think they have done a smart job of using him in different ways in different situations, right? So it's not that he's just the edge rusher, and that's what we're doing with him, and here we go. We just got to keep getting him better at that. Certainly, that's a focus, continuing to get him more comfortable in that role, but recognizing, man, this is a guy that can do a bunch of different things for you and disrupt offenses in a bunch of different ways. And so I think I think they have done a really good job of figuring out different ways to use him, depending on the situation, depending on what you're seeing from the offenses. And, you know, I think he's getting much more comfortable. You can certainly see that as this season has come along. I think he's playing faster. I think he's understanding what his role is and the different ways he can help this team. And, you know, I know there was a mock draft out this week. One of the ESPN mock drafts actually has him going third overall to the Carolina Panthers here in the spring. Regardless of how that plays out, it's certainly an indication that Abdul Carter is catching the attention of a lot of people and that the move seems to be working out very well for him.
Well, obviously the skill set is there for him. I think also part of the improvement you talked about, some of those penalties that were going on, him specifically, we haven't seen that in a while, have we, Jeff?
Yeah. Nope. He has cleaned that up. And, you know, the defense as a whole, I realize they gave up 30 points. I know there are some people critical of them. I really attribute that, and I know fans never want to hear, wow, you just played a great offense. I'm telling you, they played a great offense. That is a terrific running back, a really good offensive line, an elite quarterback, and elite receivers. And I think Penn State actually held its own. I get that they gave up 30 points. They made some plays when they needed to, and I still think Penn State is in really good shape on the defensive side of the ball. And by the way, they're doing it without arguably their best player on defense. And certainly you could make the argument for Abdul Carter, and I'm not saying that there's not a strong argument to be made there. But, you know, KJ Winston is certainly, if he's not the best player on defense, he's number two there on that side of the ball. Without him there, you know, that secondary really has not missed a beat. And the defense overall, to me, has performed very well through the first half of the season.
And Jeff, once more, jumping ahead on the agenda, but that's okay. I was actually, Jeff, going to tie linebacker depth into the KJ Winston injury, because in playing the 4-2-5, it's really just another way of saying you have a safety playing linebacker, okay? Yeah. And the KJ Winston injury kind of changed that. So, and it reflects itself at linebacker, where I think going into it, we were concerned about the depth there. Six games in, what's your feeling on that?
I really like what we're seeing from Kobe King. I know there were a couple of plays that he had a tough game against USC with. Again, I'll attribute that. I think if you look at his overall game, it was still another really good game from Kobe King. And again, USC, they are very talented on that side of the ball. But to me, Kobe King's development has been the biggest wow factor in terms of the linebacking core. You know, kind of know what you have with Dom DeLuca, and that is a good hard-nosed football player. You know what you have with Rojas, and he certainly looks more comfortable. And to me, is that guy that can kind of handle more of the passing game and disrupt some things there with his coverage skills. I just think across the board, that group is doing very well, and I think will continue to get better as the season plays out.
I want to ask you about Tom Allen so far. Because there does seem to be a trend that they start slow. And even in this USC game, as you said, 30 points to USC is not the worst thing in the world. And it was the same thing, 20 points in the first half, second half, and in the overtime, it was only 10 points. I think in some ways he suffers in comparison to how good this defense was a year ago.
Yeah, and I think we talked about that to go back to the kind of analyzing halfway through what we think now compared to the start of the season. I thought the defense would take a slight step back just because it was so elite last year, and I think it has. I think it's a small step back compared to a year ago, and we'll see. I'm still not sure that by the end of the year here if they can get fully healthy. That they're not right there with last year's group. But if they are a little behind where they were a year ago, to me, the strides that they've made offensively more than offsets that. And so I'm very comfortable with what we're seeing from the defense. And I think Tom Allen's ability to see what opposing offenses are doing and then to make the personnel and assignment adjustments to try to clamp that down have obviously been very successful through the first half of the season. And I think, again, as some of those younger players now have the confidence that some of those older players already had, I think you're going to see some even greater variations here in terms of the way that this Penn State defense can attack offenses.
I agree with you, Jeff. And I think there's also the adjustment period for Tom Allen just to understand what kind of talent he has. And he had to make another adjustment when, like you said, KJ Winston became injured.
Yeah. And I think they have made those adjustments. I think the communication there has been really good with players and coaches. I mean, it just feels like everybody has a really good understanding of what they're trying to do, what the assignments are on given plays. And again, I think it's just going to keep getting better.
All right, there you go. Jeff, you get the ultimate final word of the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.